Hey everyone, this is Julian, and you are listening to the Clear Cash podcast. As always, I'm here with Nick.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going, Nick?
It's going well. It's going nicely.
So have you been playing PUBG still?
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes I pop in and I have a good time. It's better optimized these days. I turned the texture down to low, which is something that I never really felt like I should have to do because the game looks like shit.
Yeah.
but I did, and that was a big improvement. And yeah, I still pop in from time to time.
Did you not think about turning it down before because you are just a graphic stickler? You need to have them on ultra?
I don't really play games that have story or whatever. I mostly play games that are just pre-rendered cutscenes played out in front of me. Like my favorite game is the 3D Max benchmark.
Favorite game all time.
Absolutely. Sometimes I load up the NVIDIA benchmark. That's a pretty good one too. But that fairy, she never makes eye contact with me. So real bummer.
Yeah, you know, I still never really gotten into PUBG, so I'm not really sure where the community is yet. I fall on the Fortnite side of the fence right now, and I probably always will. I'm already entrenched. But right now there's like a huge, not controversy, but there's a lot of waves being made in Fortnite with this like mystery meteor comet thing that no one knows what's going to happen. The developers are quiet about it. I don't really care. It seems like it's going to be an event that happens in the game sometime soon. Interesting, but it's just, it doesn't capture enough of my attention to warrant like doing research or really getting into this whole meteor thing. But that's where the Fortnite community is at right now.
Right.
They haven't really had anything like that in PUBG, right?
No, PUBG has always been straightforward about what it is, what it's offering. And then the only real discussion has been around, whether or not things should be nerfed. Which is fine. Like, it's a solid base, obviously. Also, like, PUBG's been around for a while at this point relative to Fortnite. Really hasn't been around very long at all. But Fortnite's still early in the conversation around the meta, and it's still being developed actively in that way. So I can see why the community conversation in Fortnite is so active.
Yeah.
People are still trying to sort it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're a very active developer group. They add new things to the game every week. And I'm not sure if that's something PUBG's doing, but they add it. I for a while now, Fortnite has been adding a new weapon or item to the game seemingly every week. And then they have the weekly challenges now if you buy the battle pass.
Right.
So there's I think that's why we've seen a Fortnite become more in the zeitgeist right now over PUBG.
Yeah, PUBG is stagnant relative to Fortnite.
Yeah, and I mean, when I was playing PUBG with you a little bit, I couldn't make a connection there, and I think that's previous experience playing Fortnite that's causing that.
That makes sense.
So when we played PUBG, during the few times that we did, we never played for that long. And one of the things that kept happening, which I didn't really understand and I didn't see the purpose of really, were the red zones that would appear on the map while you're playing, which I believe they're bombing runs or something.
Right.
Yeah. I even asked you, I'm like, should we be wary of these? And you said, no, just avoid them. That's it. Like, they're not a big deal.
Yeah, so the one of the interesting through lines of PUBG's aesthetic is the notion that it's like a post-military conflict scenario where there's just bombed-out buildings, abandoned cities, there's weapons laying around. Like, it feels like you've been thrust into an area that has been in conflict. And these bombing areas, these red zones, kind of feed into that aesthetic in an interesting way stylistically, but also in terms of how they affect gameplay. Effectively, they're randomly generated danger zones that you are supposed to enter buildings to wait out or you can run through them and risk dying from being randomly hit by a mortar. And there's been this recent community outcry about whether or not they're purposeful or valuable or even fair. And there's a whole conversation happening between players and the developers about the future of these red zones, because people are having a similar reaction to you, maybe an even more intense reaction than you are actually.
Yeah, well, I assume the people that are having that type of reaction are players who are fully invested in the game and spend a lot of time playing the game and maybe frustrated that they've been on a really good run where they maybe have a few kills and find themselves in a red zone and then get hit by one of the bombs. And that's the end of their run, the end of their round. And, you know, I can see why that they would be frustrated, because it feels like a useless death. It wasn't like you were outmatched or outskilled by an opposing player. It would feel more like you had accidentally killed yourself, like you had jumped off a building in the game, because, you know, there's fall damage. And I would imagine that they would feel like they had done that, or more so that the game cheated them, I guess, out of a potential win or a potential victory.
Yeah. So red zones have been in the game since it really like struck a chord with the public, and they haven't really, I've been playing the game as a dedicated player for, I don't know, 8 months probably. I've never noticed anybody complaining about them, because they're very hard to die in. You can die, like, don't get me wrong, like, you can be struck by a bomb and die, but it's never happened to me anecdotally. And separately, like, the developers themselves have declared it rare and unlikely. And recently there's been a community response of, we actually want the red zones to go, we don't want them anymore, they're frustrating, they are cheap, and they're totally random, and they basically are asserting that the red zones are interfering with their ability to exercise their skills. Like, I want to play fairly, and I want to win because I'm good, or I want to die because someone's better than me. And the developers have said, well, the red zones exist because they allow for audio cover. The bombs are extremely loud, and you, in experiencing that, cannot hear other players running, shooting, you know, whatever. So you can actually utilize them strategically to advance on players that you've seen, or move, you know, wherever you want to go. Open doors, shut doors, you know, nobody's going to notice. And I buy that personally. I think that's a good choice. But other players are like, well, I don't want any randoms interfering with my, you know, skills, basically.
Right. Yeah, I get that. I mean, to me, I think that I would be fine without them. But again, like, I have not too much experience playing the game, but hearing it from you and experiencing it for the little amount of time I did, I realized that they did seem like not important to the through line of the game, playing the game. They just seemed like they were just there, you know, like part of the environment.
Yeah, they just kind of happen. And yeah. So my reaction to this is twofold. One of my reactions is that I feel like this community like outcry about the red zones is actually fed by the community response to Fortnite, in that Fortnite has a very active community and has a very active participation, or appears to be participatory in the development of Fortnite. Like, community will say, like, I want this change, and the developers will make these minor changes, and they might even like inject suggestions that into the game world that they're aware of what the community is paying attention to.
Absolutely. So the
community feels involved, and PUBG has been a very stagnant, I don't know if stagnant's fair. Well, yeah, it is. It basically, they made the second map and they kind of left it alone for a while. No material changes. You know, the game doesn't inject new weapons into the game on a regular basis, which is fine as a player. Like, I don't mind that. But it's easy to see how a PUBG player might be looking longingly at the community outreach happening in Fortnite and say like, well, I want my wishes granted. And PUBG versus Fortnite, it's also very, the player base between the two games is very different. Fortnite is anybody, really. And then PUBG is like, I'm a very dedicated player who is taking this much more seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and that's putting it gently. Like, I have different opinions. So these players, they don't want things interfering with their ability to exercise their skill set. They want to be taken seriously. They want the game to take them seriously. And they see the red zones as silly and unfair, because if you die by them, it feels cheap or whatever. In a game where if you fucking don't stop your car properly, you fucking die.
Right.
So I don't know. So the second response that I have to this is that the whole game is predicated on randomness, like where weapons appear, where supply drops fall, where the circle contracts to. All of these things are totally random. The only difference between them and the red zone is that those other things, if you can benefit from the randomness of those other things. If they happen to fall in your favor, you could win the game, right? Red zones, you can't have a material benefit from experiencing a red zone. You can only have a negative benefit because you could die in them, right?
Yeah.
And I think player attitude is generally like, oh boy, this supply drop just happened to fall by me. I'm going to use my knowledge of the meta and my skill set to go take that weapon and then win the game with it. Whereas like if a red drop or if a red zone falls on them and they die in it, they're like, fuck this game, that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same principle of randomness. It's just one of them hurts them and the other one makes them better.
Yeah.
And personally, I just think those players are full of shit. Like really the game is random all across the board. It's just this one, they can't manage to twist it in their favor. So they want it out of there.
So do you think that, how many people work on PUBG now as developers, you know? Do you think
a
it's
lot.
Like, okay, it's gotta be a lot, right?
Do you think like they'll
bend?
And,
think they'll bend to the demands of the
they, you know,
here with the red zones?
They're in a tough spot because Fortnite is inarguably the biggest game in the world right now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
PUBG was a phenomenon. It was the biggest game on Steam by a mile. It's probably still up there. I have no doubt it's still doing well. But Fortnite absolutely stole its thunder.
Completely.
And they don't know what to do. And a lot of the things that have happened recently with PUBG have been direct responses to Fortnite's success. They're making a smaller map in this new jungle map that's coming up, that's physically smaller than the other two. And the community is trying to assert what it wants because they've seen that be successful with Fortnite, its competitor. And I don't think PUBG is growing its player base any longer. Fortnite absolutely is for a variety of reasons. So I feel like Bluehole, the developers, are in a tough spot where they feel like they have to acquiesce to anything that might keep their player base with them.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, worth noting, though, that the developer or the creator, PlayerUnknown, he has personally said, I think they're fine. Everybody should get over it.
Okay, so that's his attitude then.
Well, his attitude was specifically they provide cover fire. They're specifically for cover audio, and if you die in them, that shouldn't be happening. You should be better.
Is
what he said.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. I follow a lot of hockey players on Instagram because I'm a fan of the sport, and I swear, dude, just in the past 3 months, every single hockey player I follow on Instagram posts about Fortnite now.
It's insane.
Like, everyone plays this damn game.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do, man? The game is cross-platform across every platform that exists, except for PlayStation 4. But it doesn't matter. Like, it's cross. Like, you can play it on anything, and it runs fantastic.
It runs really well on mobile, which is weird.
It runs spectacularly. And we're talking about the competitor, PUBG, which runs like shit, like relative to how good it looks, it runs bad. I've got a 1070 and 16 gigs of RAM and an i7. You've got a 10, what do you have, a 1060? Yeah. And I'm sure that you're not at ultra on that thing.
No.
No. And you've played other games where you can crank that puppy
I
up.
can, yeah, I can get this thing burning, but
It's, yeah, there's no excuse for this game to run like garbage. There's just a number of things that are in Fortnite's favor in terms of accessibility. That's what PUBG has going against it. It's pure accessibility.
yeah.
You can't even fucking play the game properly on Xbox One, and it's released on that console.
Yeah. You can't. It's unplayable on Xbox One. I purchased it on Xbox One and then I refunded it immediately because I think you can play a game for 2 hours and get it refunded within that time limit. And I played one round and I was like, okay, well, this is not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, to their credit, I'm sure that they're doing work. I'm sure that the game is improved since it's released, but all of these hurdles are enough to push people who don't care enough to keep trying towards other games. And
Yeah.
this is coming from somebody who has tried to convince people to play on PC for the last like 10 years of any version of game. If the other person runs into the first obstacle, they are going to turn around. It's just the way it is. People don't want to deal with bullshit.
Yeah, and I mean, we're in a time now where I think the biggest obstacle for anyone that's not within the industry, that's working in the industry, is just the monetary value that everything is set at and how actually expensive it ends up being to keep up with that,
Right.
which
And
it's
yeah,
really impossible actually. I mean,
totally. It's also worth noting that Fortnite is free.
being in the industry obviously gives you the access to anything you could want gaming wise. Everyone gets press kits. That's why most YouTubers you follow that have any sort of big following, most of the stuff that they play they get for free.
Right.
And you know what I've also noticed as a side note is that no one really does reviews anymore. Reviews are like dead for real. Like it exists on some capacity with Metacritic and things like that, but review videos are just not real hits, you know. And I just don't see them as much as I used to. Not since like the Adam Sessler days on XPlay. Those are
Right.
the flyest reviews, bro.
Yeah, dude, give me some Morgan Webb. Using some fucking gamer slang.
So
Yeah.
good.
Reviews have changed in an interesting way. I like the way that they've evolved for those who want to think about like what purpose they might serve now. I know that I don't need to watch a review to see like whether or not the graphics are good any longer, like, but I am interested in hearing someone talk about what the game makes them feel. I guess that's essentially like what a review has evolved to for some people, and I'm happy for that evolution.
Yeah, and I mean, and with the ease of writing your own review on Steam, or I don't know how many people use like the Xbox review feature, but I mean, everyone has an opinion, and everyone's gonna pop out a review on those various platforms.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like I noticed that when I do watch reviews or anything, the thing I keep in my head is like, okay, I know that they were given this game, and I've received review codes for stuff also,
Right.
and I always consider that as well. It's that they are receiving this game for free, whereas I generally am buying everything that I want to play,
Right.
like Kingdom Come, right?
Right.
Did you see this game in action?
It looks like shit.
It was shit, but like trying to keep up with, the gaming zeitgeist and knowing that there's a big blockbuster type game like Kingdom Come that is coming out. You purchase it on the idea that it's going to be a big deal, and perhaps if you're a content creator like me and you are, that you could perhaps get some content out of that that's worthwhile.
Yeah, you want to participate. You want
Exactly.
people, maybe you have something to say about it.
And when you spend your own money on it, right, and then it turns out to be just so bad. You're left with what review can you give at that point?
Yeah, sometimes you got nothing to say.
Sometimes there's nothing to say.
Like I stopped playing Far Cry after the last time we talked. I just don't fucking care about that game. And but I spent $50 on it. And what am I supposed to do now? Am I supposed to buy the next game? I don't know if I'm gonna get anything out of that. Keeping up is tough, right?
It is.
Even if you're not a content creator, you're most people who play games and participate in online discussions, Twitter, Facebook, or reading posts, reading sites, whatever, you want to be on the same page as everybody else to some degree. Like, you can't be fully out of touch and follow the game's culture as it moves, right? So there is some notion of like, well, what's coming out that I'm interested in that maybe I want to participate in the conversation around? And sometimes you miss, like you and I did. You bought Kingdom Come, I bought Far Cry 5, and they just don't stick. And now you're out $50 and what, are you gonna make that mistake again?
Yeah,
that's tough.
It is, and I think that maybe we should switch, because I actually enjoyed playing Far Cry 5, although I haven't played it recently, so maybe there is something to be said about that. So maybe I can we'll toss Kingdom Come your way and see how you get into that.
Well, what do we care? I mean, nobody's talking about those things anymore.
Yeah, no, it's true. It came and went. It's gone. No one will ever talk about it again.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Honestly. And that's tough. Like, if you're the average person like you or me, you're buying everything that you want to participate in the conversation around. And unless you're a games writer or you're a child who has an allowance, you have to measure those purchases. Is it too expensive to continue trying to participate in this conversation? Do I have the time to play the games that I purchase? How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I agree. I like thinking of something like No Man's Sky, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was something everyone wanted to participate in because of the hype that was there for it. And right. Once people started playing it and it was a big letdown in a lot of ways and it wasn't what people were expecting, it had a conversational shift from, wow, this game is going to be so cool. There's going to be a lot of cool things we can do. So many planets, so many weird looking dinosaurs and aliens, dinosaur looking aliens. And then when it fell flat, the conversation shifted to, okay, this sucks. What a letdown. I'm bored. And then you move on, and then no one talks about No Man's Sky anymore. So if you're wanting to be a part of that conversation, that's the arc that you follow, where it's like you're hyped. You know, for me, and I'm sure you, when we both played this game, the arc is, okay, wow, okay, this game's coming out. Looks really good. I'm excited. Here's my pre-release expectation. Okay, the game's out now. I'm playing it. I feel weird about it. Don't know exactly how do I feel. Let's go read reviews. Okay, everyone's mad. Why is everyone mad? And then you follow that path. And then by the end of it, you're like, okay, well, everyone doesn't like this game. It's no good. How do I feel? And then maybe you've had your opinion change from what other people have said. And then maybe you watch a review that points things out that you didn't quite notice but makes sense. And you say, okay, yeah, that's right. I did spend a lot of times on planets with just nothing to do, just walking around. And all the dinosaurs did look weird, or the aliens' creatures looked strange in a way that I didn't like. They looked blocky and they didn't move right, and they floated sometimes when they weren't supposed to. So and then that's the path, and then you're at the end of the rope, and it's over. You spent $60 on a game that you've had your perception of to be negative by the end of it. And what does that do long run for those who have the means to maybe get one game every 3 months?
Yeah. So like the best possible outcome is you make a purchase and it's a long game and you happen to have 4 days off from work, and you have the time to enjoy that week, the weekend of release, and you burn through it, you get some good gifts out of it, you have a conversation, oh, did you guys see that shit? I can't believe that shit. Everybody's having that experience at the same time of having run into that first thing at the same time, basically, because everybody's got the same they're at the same points, right? And everybody's having that reaction, and then you beat it, and then you're done, and everybody's moved on along with you because you've completed it within the like generalized time frame.
Yeah.
That's the ideal scenario. No, that scenario doesn't play out on a regular basis for most people.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And for us, and for me, I think that I try to maintain some level of community with things, and I want to experience things as they happen. But maybe that's not the right course. Maybe it's more important to focus on the things that you enjoy that could be from the past, that you could you could focus in on, right? Especially as a content creator, like Let's Plays, for example. I noticed that a lot of people who maintain a big presence on YouTube, whether they belong to a company like Polygon or something like that, when they do Let's Plays of things or when they revisit games, it could be something from a couple years ago that that they then narrow in on and create content from that is interesting in a different way than just being the core game. Like they provide interesting commentary, or they provide a new look at something that maybe the public hadn't seen before or bothered to think of it in that way. And that's just a really popular concept right now, I imagine, and I've seen is that the narrowing in on a subject as opposed to covering a wide berth of video game culture that not everyone has the means to do or access.
Yeah, a particular example that comes to mind is the Grown Ups 2 podcast, where these two guys watch Grown Ups 2 all the way through before they record every episode. And then it's a trudging, awful experience.
Yeah, I
And
can imagine.
they record a new version of the same conversation about how much the movie sucks. And the notion of taking this piece of media and removing it from the current social discourse around popular culture and having that conversation and experience in a vacuum is interesting, and I think that it's a conscious response, and for a lot of people, that I can't keep up with what's happening. I'm not a games writer. I don't get free game codes every day to experience. I don't have the time or money to invest in following where popular culture is going. So I have to make a decision to not participate. And maybe my decision is to focus on a particular thing. And those focus the people who do that are often very successful in that they're very popular. Like the Grown Ups 2 podcast, quite popular. And your the Let's Plays that you describe, very popular. You
Yeah.
know, like it's original Let's Plays were of old games.
Yeah. I mean, there's a guy I occasionally watch on YouTube. Goes by the name Northern Lion. I have no idea what his real name is, but he posts daily videos of him playing, sometimes multiple videos a day of him playing Binding of Isaac. And he's been doing it for years. And he's got a pretty big YouTube following as well as a live stream Twitch following. But the amount of Isaac content he's created is absolutely staggering and insane. He has multiple series of his playthroughs of the various versions of Isaac. And each of those playlists of videos are like 600 deep. The
That's
dude
crazy.
loves Isaac, plays it every day. And I like that game, but I cannot imagine playing Isaac every single day and making that much content and having something new to say about it. And while that game does allow for a certain level of randomness and freshness and newness because it is randomly generated when you play it, I would think that by even episode 50, I would be exhausted talking about Isaac. So I applaud that.
Totally, but another another way to approach that situation is this guy is doing it because he likes to. He feels no pressure to branch out, try a new thing, keep up with anything. He's very good at, I imagine he's very good at Binding of Isaac. People like watching him play these things, so he knows what he produces is wanted, and it's probably just a pleasant experience for him to approach this thing from a position of not feeling pressure.
Yeah, and that's something that you can easily fall into if you want to create any content related to gaming culture and trying to stay relevant and live in the now, is that there is an immense pressure to do that very thing, to know what the latest game is and talk about it.
And to have like an opinion on it.
And have an opinion. That's the most important part, is if you're going to have an opinion on the newest big game, you need to play at least 6 or 10 hours. I think that's generally what most reviewers say, is like the magic area is to play at least 6 to 10 hours of a game to get a semi-formed opinion, or even a full opinion if it's a shorter game, obviously. But to play 6 or 10 hours a game, you must own it. And if you aren't in the industry, it means you're paying for it.
Right.
So you can't really be that level of a content creator.
Yeah, like after I bought Far Cry 5 and I just didn't have a good time with that game. I was very disenfranchised because I haven't bought a new $60 game in months. I don't really have a lot of time to play games. So I've always been content to wait until they go on sale. I don't need to participate in the ongoing conversation. But Far Cry 5 had so much subject matter around it that interested me. Its failure to communicate its politics, the fact that it's a new Far Cry game that I haven't played that series in a long time, its approach to its portrayal of its region, all these things seemed very interesting to me, and I wanted to give it a shot and get in at the ground floor on a subject that people were going to be talking about. And it didn't work out for me. I didn't care enough about that game to continue. So I looked at my back catalog and decided I was going to play Dark Souls 3. And I asked a friend if they wanted to play Dark Souls 3 alongside me, and we could have our own conversation around our shared experience of playing through Dark Souls 3. And that's been really nice, because we are in a way like inventing our own zeitgeist of trying to keep up with each other in our simultaneous playthroughs of this game, and having our own conversation away from the pressure of the other person moving on, the other person being the rest of the community, which if we started playing Dark Souls 3 on release, we'd be dusted by that community. Like, Dark Souls community is extremely dedicated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unraveling those games as soon as possible. There's no way I would have been able to keep up with that conversation.
Yeah. I found that because Dark Souls 3 was the first Dark Souls game that I've ever been able to get into, and I got really into it. Right. I got it on release day, and going into Dark Souls 3 having not had much experience with the previous games, mm-hmm. but then getting really into it and wanting to learn everything about the lore, mm-hmm. was insurmountable, and it was it gave me a headache, and it gives me a headache now thinking about it.
yeah, I mean, like, part of the relief that I experience is the previous knowledge of Dark Souls. I've played and beaten all the other ones, so it's not, I feel no pressure playing Dark Souls 3. I know what I'm into. I'm already good enough at the game. It's overall a very pleasant experience moving forward in that series, or in that game. Whereas if I was trying to continue if I was trying to participate in the conversation in God of War, for example, mm-hmm. as it's happening right now,
yes,
or will be in a couple of days, I won't be able to do that. I don't have the time on a day-to-day basis to keep up with the people who are going to have the most to say, who are going to say what they have to say in front of me, you know, like on Twitter or whatever. And I'll take in their experience and their opinions before I even get to the game, which is its own way of affecting how I respond to a piece of media. Like, I want to be experiencing it on my own. You know, I don't want somebody to experience it for me and then tell me what I'm going to what experience I'm going to have.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
But you know, we often talk about like not having enough time. Like I said, I don't have enough time. I have on average about 10 hours a week to play games, which is plenty of time to play a game, right?
Yeah.
What I guess I'm saying when I say I don't have enough time, it's not that I don't have enough time to play games. It's that the amount of time that I have is not enough to play enough games, quantity wise. Like I want to play many games. And in general, when adults say, I used to have more time to play games, I used to like long games because I had more time, but I don't have that time anymore, so therefore I don't like long games too. I think something that we're neglecting to mention is that when we were kids and we did have more time, and we did like long games, we weren't participating in an ongoing social experience of playing a game. Like the game's discourse was not constantly moving. You know, at best it was moving on a month-to-month basis with the publishing of games magazines.
Yeah, Nintendo Power.
Right. You know, those issues would come out, they would say what they have to say, and then nobody would have anything else to say for another month. So you had enough time to get through whatever experience they were talking about. And at best, you were having these conversations with your friends, the games that they were playing, and those people had the same amount of money and time that you did. So you're all on the same page. Now we're older, we have less time because we have jobs and stuff. But additionally, games are releasing at an exponentially higher rate. Many dozens more games are coming out on a weekly basis than they used to, just in general. And then on top of that, the conversation around those games is just constantly happening. You feel overwhelmed. One feels overwhelmed by this experience. And when we say we don't have enough time to play games, what we really mean is, I don't have time to finish this game before the rest of the community moves on and starts talking about the next game. I can't keep up.
It's crazy. I mean, Far Cry 5 is probably 2 weeks old at this point. Mm-hmm. And God of War, like you said, comes out in a couple days.
Right.
And that's going to be a huge game. And people are already talking about it to the point where no one's talking about Far Cry 5 anymore.
I haven't heard anyone talk about Far Cry 5 in a week.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
That's how fast, like, things go.
Yeah. So I think it's valuable that we consider that the reason that we don't like long games is not because long games are bad, or that we don't have enough time. It's that we are feeling pressured by our desire to participate, and that's really the problem. We have to find a healthy balance in like whether or not we're going to decide to participate in the conversation or not. And sometimes most of the time the answer is no, I'm not going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah, I don't need to be a part of any conversation. I can sequester myself underneath a few layers of blankets, put some earmuffs on.
Yeah, dude, I've already got my manuscript is 30,000 pages long. It's filled one of my closets. Mm-hmm. And when I die, they're going to find my mummified body and my manuscripts. People are going to read what I have to say.
I'm really glad that you have a manuscript closet, because I do too.
Oh, good.
It's exclusively for my manuscripts as well.
I was thinking about moving on to the second, but I don't know where I'll keep my clothes.
Hmm. You don't need clothes.
Dump them. Clothes. Get them out of here. Who talks about clothes?
No one. Not in my world. My world is built by Bluehole, by Bethesda, okay? These are the creators of my world.
That's right.
Insomniac.
Right. I am a gamer.
Cryware. Unreal Engine.
If you're wearing Tommy Bahama, you're not hardcore, baby.
Not at all.
I only wear swag.